If you're redeemed, why don't you give him great praise right now? Jesus, we love you. Jesus, we love you. We're so thankful for your salvation. We're thankful for your grace and for your mercy that we did not deserve. God, help us to share that with the world. That you, the God of all grace, the God of mercy, want to reach down and touch them and draw them into your family. In Jesus' name. Well, I know some of you were questioning whether I would get here tonight, but here I am. God bless you. You may be seated. I'm going to do a little something different tonight because we are family, something that I would not do just anywhere. In fact, I have not done it anywhere, but I intend to answer three or four questions that I get on a consistent basis, and then maybe tie in some spiritual things at the end of all of that. But before I begin, let me just say that it is 21 and a half years since we walked into 13th and Gravois on a Sunday night at the end of June 1996. I looked it up today. I'm not sure if it was the 23rd or the 30th, but we had just gotten off of 6 weeks of chorale tour, and that was a lengthy chorale and ensemble tour. That was a lengthy time, and back then, and I think maybe it's still true at Urshan, but when it was Gateway College of Evangelism, you could change churches every semester, so you could go and check out different places and find a place maybe that would be home. And so my freshman year at Gateway, we had attended a different church, and we decided it was time to move on. And so after tour that year on a Sunday night, we walked in, and we intended to pick a church for 1 year, and then we would do something else the next year, but it has been 21 and a half years that Apostolic Pentecostal Church has been home. So Crystal and I were reminiscing today, and I'd mentioned to Pastor I probably wouldn't do this because I might get emotional somewhere along the way. So I will just maybe hit a few highlights of things that we have learned from Apostolic Pentecostal Church. But before I do that, we walked in, actually, I don't even know if service had started. There were a number of things that were vivid about that first service, which is kind of what made it home. The Williffords were actually out of town on vacation, I believe. Roger Spaugh was preaching that night. We were sitting on, if you were, of course, familiar with 13th and Gravel, we'd have been sitting on this side toward the back. And I saw a family sitting in the middle section, just a couple of rows in front of the sound booth. And, man, they were all dressed up, suit. And I was like, man, they've got another minister and his family visiting. Turned out that it was Gary and Sheila Swift and their kids. They had been over at Troy for quite a while, and it was their first service back at Apostolic Pentecostal Church. But I just knew they were preachers, and so I really convinced he's still running from the call of God on his life. Because far be it for me to be wrong, of course. So he's running from the call. And when he got up here to sing a while ago, which I think is pretty cool, that we were both sitting in the back that night, and 21 and a half years later, we were both on the platform tonight. So, but when he got up to sing, Pastor said, man, that dude's anointed. And he is indeed, and they have been good friends ever since. But the twins, to put this into perspective, the Spa twins were 13 months old. Pastor Brad was about this tall. It's been a long time. We have grown old at Apostolic Pentecostal Church. But we have learned a lot of things, and maybe before I'll tell you our timeline here in just a minute, but before we have our last service here, maybe we'll get a chance to do this, and then maybe we'll make my wife take the microphone, and she would be more eloquent than I on some of this. But we have learned how to be generous at this church. We were poor college students, and I think together we made about $200 a week my first year as a student of at Gateway College. So we were well below the poverty line. But it was very seldom that a service would go by that somebody did not offer to take us out to eat or to give us money. And sometimes it was Marsha Reaver, and sometimes it was Skip Pratt or Brother Sharp, and we just learned how to be generous with all the generosity that people showed us. And then, of course, when Anthony came along, this church invested in our kids tremendously, and Diane Bjorklund every Sunday drilling the new birth, the plan of salvation, and Anthony will never forget the new birth. And he learned a lot, and sometimes he would correct the teachers. But this church has invested, of course, in our children, and we are grateful for that. And this church has taught us how to have faith to believe that God can do anything. And that no matter what the situation, God is in control, and God can take care of every situation that comes up. And God has, of course, spoken to us numerous ways and impacted our lives in various services and various ways. And we are forever grateful for our time here, and we'll miss Apostolic Pentecostal Church. But we feel like God has given us a direction, and we are going to endeavor to honor that call. And one other thing before I kind of get into the Metro Missions piece of this, and that is, Brother Williford has exemplified what it means to honor a legacy and what it means to honor elders and how to treat them and respect them. Why don't you give Pastor a hand? So we're going to start a church that will not have a legacy, but maybe one day it will have a legacy and somebody will do the same for that. Well, let me explain to you. One of the questions I do get asked a whole lot is, so what exactly again are you doing? And so it's been a little bit ambiguous, and I know people have, they know that many of you know we're going to plant a church, but we're not just going to plant a church in the sense of a regular church planter, shall I say, but we are part of the Metro Missions Ministry of the North American Missions Division of the United Pentecostal Church. That is a mouthful. But what that really means is that Metro Missions was designed for people to go into metropolitan areas and that were underchurched and to begin to plant churches, and hopefully they would plant more than one. And unlike many church planters who are bivocational, where they're working a secular job 40 hours a week and they're trying to plant a church, and let me just say this, those people are heroes that are doing that. The sacrifices and time and money that they make, those are heroes. We are not doing that. We felt a different direction. But Metro Missions is very similar to Global Missions in the sense that it is a full-time church planting ministry. And that means that just like Metro Mission, our Global Missions, that the process is that we have to raise a budget for 5 years, a monthly budget, and that when we get on site, our 5 years will begin, and we will be fully funded for that five-year period while we're endeavoring to plant one or more churches. And so I will be full-time planting a church. Crystal will be full-time planting a church. The spouse is not allowed to work. Neither of us will be allowed to work outside of that process of planting a church. So it is an expensive endeavor as we're raising money, not only for living expenses, but also for some of the church expenses as we get that off the ground, and probably rental and equipment and a variety of things of that nature. So that's how Metro Missions differs a little bit from most North American church planters. It is not part of CFC, which is a different program. It is a unique program. And right now, I would say that there are more people that are involved in the Metro Missions program than at any other time in its history. And one interesting thing, the first Metro missionary went to Kansas City. The very first one, the United Pentecostal Church, went to Kansas City back in 1989, I believe. And so that's we were actually living in Kansas City when Brother Herman Gant arrived on scene to plant a church there. So that's kind of the over. That's what we're doing. We're going, as Pastor said this morning, we are going to plant a church from ground zero. So we will not take an existing church. We're not going to jump into a building or any of that, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But maybe the biggest question that people ask, other than you're still here, I get that a lot too, and they mean that with the best of intentions, Pastor. They're just wondering why I'm not out doing the will of God. I said it was the will of God. Get out there and do something. So other than that, the question that I get asked the most is, so why are you doing this again? And a version of that is, are you sure this is the will of God and God has called you to do that? And so one of my friends, of course, he asked that all the time, including this morning. And I will not mention any names, but his initials are Mark McClain. And so I told him, I said, I'll tell the story tonight and you can decide after tonight on whether this is the will of God or not. So I could make this a very lengthy story. And my wife has heard that. One of my spiritual gifts is verbosity. So I will try not to do that. And I will also tell you this. I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit. There is a chronology to this story, but there are things that happened that I didn't know about until later. And so I'll go back maybe and pick those pieces up instead of telling the full chronology of it. But let me start this back in 2012. I left Gateway College of Evangelism, went to work for the Pentecostal Publishing House. And when we left Gateway and went to the publishing house, we decided to start looking for a house. And I don't see Mary Brewer, but we looked for a house for a number of years. And off and on, we would look and be more intense at other times. And so we got real serious about looking for a house, and then headquarters started talking about moving. And up until that point, we just didn't feel good about anything. We looked at houses all over the place, and we didn't feel good about it. And then headquarters started talking about moving, so we decided we weren't going to move until we knew what headquarters was going to do. In fact, there was even a point in which the discussion was that if a building was not found for the world headquarters here in St. Louis, that headquarters may move out of state, and so we definitely didn't want to buy a house. And so we waited a little bit, and then the decision was made to move headquarters to Weldon Spring. And so then we got real serious. We knew kind of what we needed to accomplish between Apostolic Pentecostal Church and where the world headquarters was going to be, and New Life Christian School, where our children attended there in North County. And so we were triangulating all of this and trying to figure out a place. And we looked and looked and just did not feel good about it. And Sister Mary was so patient with us through this process. But finally, in June of 2016, we put a contract in on a house. And we had prayed a lot about this. And in fact, a couple of things had happened before that. Back in that year, in the spring of that year, and maybe even a little bit before, this important piece of the story is that Crystal was trying to decide whether she would go to work or go back to school. And she counseled with Sister Williford and decided that, you know what, there is a unique period of time that she did not have to do any of that. And so she took that opportunity to begin to pray every morning. And one of the things that she prayed, and you heard me tell this story if you were here, probably been a year and a half ago almost, about restoring the years. And, of course, she knew that part of my testimony where all those people got the Holy Ghost at teen camp in Louisiana. And so she began to pray that God would restore the years. And that was some of her specific words. But she also was praying that I would have the opportunity to preach and to teach and to do Bible studies and see people get the Holy Ghost again and healings. And she really didn't know what she was praying for, because this is not what she was expecting, nor was it what I was expecting. And then April 25th, 2016, I was sitting on the platform at Mississippi District Conference, and Brother Jerry Jones had preached. I don't remember anything about the service, really, except that during the altar call, sitting on the platform there, I took out my device, and I wrote a prayer. And the prayer that I wrote down was that, God, whatever house you give us, let it be a house where we can do evangelism, where we can do Bible studies, where we can see people come into relationship with you. And I really expected that house to be in St. Louis. So June of that year, 2016, put the contract in on the house, and For almost 4 months, we heard nothing. It was a short sell. And so the bank was stalling the process and stalling the process. And nothing. They didn't contact Mary. She kept talking to them, trying to get an answer from the other realtor, trying to get an answer from the bank. And they just kept stalling. Well, on Tuesday night at General Conference 2016, it would have been September 27th, at the altar call, unbeknownst to me, because I'm usually very busy at General Conference, and Crystal and I don't talk a lot, but she was at the altar and she was praying, and God spoke to her and said, "That's not your house. I've got something else." She doesn't tell me that, but we had already decided that we had a budget and we weren't going to go over that budget, and if they wanted more money, we were going to turn the house down. Well, Thursday at noon, I get a text from Mary that the bank has finally responded. After almost 4 months, Thursday at noon, they say, "We want $20,000 more." We weren't together. I was in a service, and she was on her way, and so I text her. I said, "The bank says they want $20,000, and her answer back was, "That's not, no, we're not doing that." So I text Mary, "We're done. Tell them we're out." And once again, I didn't know what God had said to her on Tuesday. I just knew what we had decided about the money, so I didn't really think anything about it. Well, that afternoon, we went to lunch with some people, and while we were there, they received final confirmation that they were appointed as Metro missionaries to Portland. Well, I didn't really think anything about that. In fact, the whole time we were there, I was thinking of good ways that he could plant this church and how he could do things, and even how the publishing house could help out with missionaries and Metro missionaries and do all of this. It was not on my radar that God might have something in store for us. So on Thursday night, it was the North American Mission Service, and I got into service a little late. I was at the booth for probably till about 7:30. And I really wasn't expecting anything, didn't have any inclination that something might happen. But halfway through Brother Art Hodges' message, it was clear that God was speaking. And it was clear that he was saying, "Now's the time to go." And that Metro Missions was the way and the vehicle in which we were to do this. And the third thing he says, which has proven to be true, is that I could shorten that process. Normally it is a 2-year process of traveling around raising money, but that I could shorten that process by utilizing the experience that I had at Gateway of raising funds. Well, Crystal was not at the service. Anna had blisters that night, and it was probably Providence. She had blisters from all the walking that you do at General Conference, and they were bleeding, and so she didn't make it to service that night. And the providential piece of this, and I don't encourage you to do this at all, but halfway through that message, I was on my phone on the Metro Missions website going, "All right, God, where am I going? Where is it that you want me to?" Now, don't do that. But if Crystal had been there, God would not have been able to call us that night, because she would have made me put my phone away, Pastor. Ooh. But because she was not there, God spoke to us. And so I'm feeling this call, and I don't know where. And so three places stood out, but I didn't say anything about it. She kind of knew that something was going on. She could just tell that. But as I mentioned earlier, we don't have a lot of time to get into deep conversations at General Conference. Well, on Friday night, Brother Bernard was preaching, and I knew his testimony, of his ministry sequence, and I knew all of that. But he told his testimony in a unique way that night that I had never heard before. And he said it this way. He said, "I know what it's like to be in administration at a Bible college and leave a Bible college to go to headquarters to be an executive." And then he said, "I know what it's like to be an executive at headquarters and leave to go plant a church." And I'm going like, okay, I resonate with that. And Crystal's going, no, that's not it. And he went on, he didn't say this, but he knows what it's like to leave his church and go be general superintendent. So maybe that's coming down the line. I don't know. But she was with me that night, and we went to the altar, and we're praying, and it was confirmation for me that God was speaking. And she looked over at toward the end of that time at the altar, and she said, God told me on Wednesday night, or she said, God spoke to me on Wednesday night to tell you that I would go anywhere he calls you. Well, she hadn't told me that. Until she didn't tell me that on Wednesday. We didn't talk much at General Conference. But God had been preparing her and speaking to her about what he was going to do on Thursday night and Friday night and calling us to go and plant a church. So when I had looked at the list on Thursday night during service, there were three cities that stood out to me. And one of those was Los Angeles. And part of the reason for Los Angeles was because the superintendent of the SoCal district was the one preaching, and he was given this vision and for SoCal and how they were wanting to plant a lot of churches in SoCal. So I'm looking, going, well, okay, it's SoCal. Los Angeles was on the metro list. So I put it down mentally, and then I saw that Kansas City was on the list. And my first reaction to Kansas City being on the list was, I was like, man, I didn't know that was on the list. Now, keep in mind, this is all during the middle of service. You know, everybody's being spiritual. I'm feeling the presence of the Lord, even though I'm on my cell phone. But most of you, that's not going to happen, so stay off your cell phone. But it was bought by headquarters. Maybe that's why it was able to be used for such spirituality in that moment. But my reaction when I saw Kansas City was like, God couldn't send us to Kansas City because I like Kansas City. You know, the will of God's got to be somewhere difficult and somewhere you don't like. You know, the old song, Please Don't Send Me to Africa. You know, I was like, that can't be it. But I love Kansas City, so I put it on my list. And then the other city that stood out was Chicago. And pastor there, he's now the superintendent of the Illinois district. We had talked about Chicago a number of times in a few years prior to that. And it kind of just stood out as a possibility. And really, I was not wanting, I didn't think Los Angeles was really a good idea for a variety of reasons. It's very expensive. It's a long way from home. But I did my due diligence on Los Angeles, and I called Brother Hodges and asked about a specific city in the SoCal district or in the suburbs of Los Angeles. And the moment I asked him, I said, would this city qualify for Metro Missions in Los Angeles? And he said, I think it would. And immediately when he answered, my response was one of disappointment. And I just knew that that was not what God was calling us to do. So I kind of ruled out Los Angeles, but I was really intrigued with Chicago because I knew that Kansas City couldn't be it. So I had had a couple of conversations with the district superintendent of Illinois. And of course, by this time I had brought Pastor into the loop and a few other mentors of mine into this mix but I had think, you know, God, I could see us going to Chicago. Well, less than 2 weeks after this all happened, this would have been Wednesday night, October the 12th. We had prayed and I rolled over to go to sleep, and when I did, I felt like God said to me, "Don't rule out Kansas City." And I had ruled out Kansas City. But God said, don't rule out Kansas City. And so I put Kansas City back into the mix. And by the end of October, it was clear that God was calling us to go to Kansas City. And the only way I can describe it is that it was kind of like a compass finding true north. If you've ever had a compass and played around with it, that you could see that it kind of bounces from left to right. And that was kind of what it was for me, as it was Los Angeles and Chicago. And finally, it settled on Kansas City. And so I was like, this is where we're going. This is where God is calling us. And I told Pastor, I called him right at the end of October or first of November. And he said, well, I didn't want to say anything. He said, but the moment you talked to me, I knew Kansas City was the place. And I wanted you to come to that conclusion. And so Kansas City was it, but where in Kansas City? So I began to look at all the different options, and I had Brother Gleason was one of my mentors and was part of this mix, and so I had called him early in that process as well, and he immediately said, "Now we need another church in Overland Park, Kansas, in that area." And so we talked a little bit about Kansas, but I love Missouri. I've been in Missouri since 1988, and I was good to stay in Missouri. There's a lot of Kansas City in Missouri, so I was good with staying in Missouri. But a couple of weeks into November of 2016, Brother Gleason stopped by my office. He was in town, and we talked a little bit, and we had a conversation, and he was still kind of pushing the idea that they needed more churches on the Kansas side. But I resisted that for a variety of reasons, one of which is that the way Metro Missions works is that in order to plant a church, you have to be licensed in the district in which you're going to reside or plant the church. And Kansas had not declared Kansas City to be a metro. Only Missouri had a Metro Missions target city. So it wasn't even a possibility at that point. But I kept barreling forward that Missouri, the Missouri side, was where we were supposed to be. Well, about a week before Thanksgiving 2016, and remember, my spiritual gift is verbosity, so I'm going to hurry. I went to meet with Brother Bernard, and I had felt that Friday night at General Conference that year that I should keep him in the loop. And that was not something I would normally have planned to do, just with the chain of command, and he's busy. But I went to talk with him and give him the timeline and give him my options on when we could make this public of what we were intending to do. And right toward the end of that conversation, I threw out what Brother Gleason and I had talked about as it related to the Kansas side. And immediately, Brother Bernard said, "I wouldn't rule out Kansas." And he said, "I'd keep praying about that." Well, I was ruling out Kansas just like I had ruled out Kansas City. And if you remember, God said, "Don't rule out Kansas City." And Brother Bernard, right there next to God, says, "I wouldn't rule out Kansas." Well, I ignored that. And to be honest with you, because Kansas was not somewhere I was intending to go, it really didn't register at how close what Brother Bernard said and what God had spoke to me. But after doing a site visit back to Kansas City in the end of December and looking around, we decided that Kansas was where God was calling us to be. And so in order for us to go to Kansas, they had to go through the whole metro process, and the district board had to make a resolution that Kansas would be on the metro list. And then that would have to go to the North American Missions Administrative Committee. And so in February, the district voted, and then in March, the North American Missions Administrative Committee voted. And they did all of that without knowing that we were the ones interested in going. All they knew was that somebody was interested in going and doing metro missions on the Kansas side of the Kansas City Metro. And so then another big piece of this, and I'll explain this a little more detail in a moment, was that the night before we met the Kansas District Board to get their approval, and that's the first part of the process, they had a change in leadership. And I guess maybe one of the great revivalists of the United Pentecostal Church, Brother Morrell Cornwell, who a week before had told me that he really did not want to be district superintendent. And he and I had had some interactions back in 1993, and Crystal had some interactions with him back in 1993, that while we were in Wichita, the night before we met the district board, after telling me less than a week before that he did not want to do that, Brother Cornwell was elected district superintendent of the state of Kansas. And that was, for us, some further confirmation. So, of course, we went through that process with the Kansas District, no problem. And at the end of August, we met the North American Missions Administrative Committee. And then this year at General Conference, the Executive Board signed off and approved us to be Metro Missionaries to Kansas City. So for those who have been asking the question, why is it that you're doing this, the simple answer is we're doing this because God has called us. And he has called us in such a way that it is undeniable, that it's the confirmations all along the journey that God has given us as to where we're supposed to be and why we are doing that. And one of the things I mentioned that God had spoken to us was that that Thursday night he spoke to me was that I could shorten the process. As I mentioned, it's normally 2 years. But thus far, in less than 4 months, God has enabled us to raise 67% of our budget, and we hope to be done by the end of March and do it in 6 months what most people take a year and a half to 2 years to do. Not because of who we are, but because it's another way in which God is confirming what he has spoken to us. So let me talk briefly about Kansas City and our vision. There are 19 churches in Kansas City. There are 2.1 million people in 19 churches. That means there is one church for every 110,000 people in the Kansas City metropolitan area. And on the Kansas side, where we're going, there are 850,000 people, and there are two churches, which is one church for every 425,000 people. And I would submit to you that that is not near enough churches to accomplish the task. To put it a different way is that the average church in the United Pentecostal Church and really in Christianity at large is somewhere between 75 and 100. And if we take that 100 as the average and look at any given Sunday in Kansas City, that means with 19 churches, that means there are 1,900 United Pentecostal people worshiping in a UPC church on a Sunday morning. But 1,900 sounds like a lot, except it is less than 0.1% of the population. Well, they say in order to really saturate a city with the gospel that you need one church for every 10,000 people, which means that in order for Kansas City to reach that saturation point, Kansas City would need 210 churches. That's a lot of churches. However, if you take that same 100 average and say, man, that's 100 people and 210 churches, that's 21,000 people. That's a lot of people. Except when you look at it, that's only 1% of the population in a United Pentecostal church, which I would say is not near enough. And while 210 churches sound like a lot, and it is compared to what we do, the Southern Baptist Convention has over 240 churches in the Kansas City metropolitan area for one church for every 7,700 people. However, they don't think that that is enough. They currently have 37 new church plants in the Kansas City area. Because they understand what I hope that we understand is that the way in which you reach the world is by planting new churches. It's not just about doing evangelism, and it's not just about doing Bible studies. Those things are necessary. And if you're going to build a church and plant a church, you have to have that. But there is something about a new church that causes people to want to come and check out and see what's happening at a new venue. In fact, the statistics say that in a new church that is less than 15 years old, one person is reached for Jesus Christ for every 10 people. But when a church gets over 15 years old, that number drops down to one person is reached for every 100 people in attendance. Now, I am excited about what I sense God doing here at Apostolic Pentecostal Church. We have a rich heritage. We have a long heritage. We have a great legacy. But this church is not satisfied with doing things as usual. And you heard Pastor this morning preaching, and we ended up about evangelism and how important that is. And that has been an ongoing theme over the last few months and maybe even the last year plus about the need for evangelism. So what is it that we intend to do? Well, along this journey from filling that initial call and to getting approved and now to working toward getting on site, a vision has been clarified for us. And that vision is that we want to plant a mother church and within the first 3 to 5 years to begin to plant multiple daughter works. But it's not just that we want to plant daughter works and that's the end of it, but we want to plant daughter works that have a vision to plant additional churches. And I understand this is a big vision, but over the next 25 years, we want to see 100 new churches in the Kansas City area based on what God is doing with us. And it's not because of us, it's about God. It's not because it's my vision. In fact, people say that if you can accomplish your vision, then it can't be from God, because God gives visions that only He can accomplish. He's the only one that can see this happen and see it come to pass. And I thought about this, that if we indeed have any kind of success, I understand preachers and I understand how this works. Everybody will want to know what we're doing, but at the end of the day, it's not about what we're doing. It's really about what God is doing. It's about His purpose. It's about His plan. It's about Him doing the work. The need is great everywhere. God is in the business of redeeming people. And I'm going to have Christy come to the piano, and I'm not going to give an altar call. I'm going to turn it to Pastor before we get to that point. But John 17, Jesus is praying what is titled His High Priestly Prayer, where he is praying for His disciples. And so He prays for His disciples, and then He transfers and makes a little bit of a shift and transitions, and He begins to talk about praying for the world. But He makes this clarification. He says, I'm not praying for just the whole world. I'm not praying for everybody. He says, what I'm really doing is I am praying for those who will be mine because of you. And He says that I'm praying, He prays for the disciples, and then He prays for the ones that the disciples, and by extension, that we will reach with the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I thought about that. That Jesus Himself, He prayed for us. Nearly 2,000 years ago, He prayed for us, we who would be His. But He prayed for more than us. He prayed for more than those just who came before us. But He's probably prayed for some that you and I come in contact with on a daily basis. That on a daily basis you and I meet people that if we were to open our mouth, they would be His. But if we remain silent, if we don't share what God has done for us, then maybe His prayers would be in vain because nobody tells them about Him. In Acts 18, Paul is in Corinth, and he's facing a lot of opposition in Corinth. And God speaks to them and tells him to speak boldly, to not be discouraged. And he says this, he says, for I have much people in this city. Not people that are already Christian, not people that are already followers of Jesus Christ, but there are much people who are in this city that if you leave, they won't be mine, but because you're going to be here and because you're going to do my work and you're going to evangelize, I have much people in this city. And I would tell you that in Olathe, in Overland Park, and in all of Kansas City, there are people that Jesus prayed for waiting on a witness. That He has much people in that city. And I would say that He has much people in this city. People that He has prayed for that as of yet do not know Him. As of yet have not come in contact with Him. It has been said that in recent studies that 80% of the unchurched would come to church if somebody they knew invited them and came with them. 80% of the people you know that don't go to church would come if you invited them. 80% of the people I know that are unchurched would come if I invited them. And I don't say this because I'm bringing all kinds of people, but I say it because my lack of obedience does not relieve me from preaching His Word. And I understand that I told a story with a lot of specifics and specificity and God speaking and in various ways. And I would tell you that God, most of the time, and my relationship with Him has not spoken so clearly or so forcefully or confirmed it in so many ways. So I understand that the will of God is not always that specific or personal. And many times the will of God is just finding good and doing it. And I believe this, that if you want to do the will of God, He won't let you miss it. That if your desire in your heart is to do His will, to do His plan, He will not let you miss it. He will make sure that you know His plan. He will make sure that you know His will. Let's stand together. And right before we lift our hands where we are, I'll tell you this. July of 1993 was a pivotal point in mine and Crystal's life. July of 1993 was the month that we started dating. July 3rd, after she had made the vow that she would never date me, started dating. She also made the vow she would never go to Gateway, and we spent 14 years there. God does have a sense of humor. But that month, July of 1993, shortly after we started dating, she went on a missions trip. She actually went on a couple that summer, but one of those was a missions trip to a home missions church in Florida. And the training for that, Brother Morrell Cornwell, who I told you about, did a big piece of that training at both missions trips that she did. And of course was impactful in her life. And through some other interaction during that same time, had an impact upon my life as well. And now he will be our district superintendent. But it was toward the end of July when she was on this missions trip. We were on the phone one night, and it stands out vividly in my mind. Now, you got to understand, I was raised in this. My dad was a pastor of a church in a suburb of Kansas City. And I had finally acknowledged my call to preach, and I've told you that story before. And I just assumed that one day I would pastor. But my assumption about pastoring was that I would get voted into an existing church, and that's how I would pastor. That was really my frame of reference. And I don't know if it was because Crystal was at a home missions church that week. I really don't know why, but for the first time, we started exploring, and at least I did, on the phone one night, talking about planning a church. And I remember making the comment that, you know, I don't know why we need a mega church, but we plant a church and it gets to a certain size that we should send out people to plant Daughter Works. And then we get it built back up. We send more people out to plant Daughter Works. And it was just about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, that this registered with me. That July of 2018, when we hope to be on site in Kansas City, it will be 25 years to the month that we had that first conversation about planting a church with a vision for planting Daughter Works. God's will is perfect. His timing is impeccable. All we have to do is follow His process. And I believe this church has done that. The individuals in this church have done that. And I believe you have a heart for the lost. And so as Pastor comes, would you lift your hands, your hearts, your voices to the Lord? Would you pray that God would be at work in you, that He would speak to you, that He would give you a heart for the lost, a heart for evangelism, a sensitivity to His voice, a sensitivity to His will, a desire to fulfill His will and His purpose. In the name of Jesus.
Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. There's a sense of a call of commitment tonight, and Brother and Sister Blackburn's testimony is a call to plant and pastor a church. Of course, that's a part of God's plan. But there is a general sense and sacredness here right now. And in just a moment, I'm going to open the front of this building for anybody that wants to be available in commitment to the Lord for whatever. It could include something like what Brother Blackburn. But there's the need for commitment to faithfulness, commitment to serving in the kingdom of God in whatever area you name it. Sunday school, music, Spanish ministry, prayer ministry. As you know, God doesn't call us all in the same way, in the same venues, and He doesn't call everybody global missionaries, North American missionaries. Many of us He calls to serve right where we are. But one of the most important factors is to be available to the Lord.